You are listening to station WGN.
Oh, a microphony!
And a phony at the mic! Whoa!
And radio became an accepted vehicle for nationwide news and opinion.
Notify all radio and TV stations to broadcast the following message.
Oh, is that the comedy spot?
No, Bubblehead, this isn't a comedy spot.
You're a fun guy, Dave. You're lonely on an island.
What a dope. What a maroon.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is exciting, isn't it?
10, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Happy Sunday morning, everybody. John Hansen in for Dave Plyer on the Dave Plyer Show till about 5 a.m. this morning. And looking forward to a nice 3 hours. I was in last week. We had a lot of fun. Curtis Koch, though, took the day off last. You're a busy, busy man, Curtis. You were doing about 10 things, so you had a. We gave you the night off, but you were working about like 5 hours later.
And
so
I'm still going to be doing the same thing later on today. I've got White Sox Weekly later on today from 1 to 2, and then I'm back again with Blackhawks hockey this evening.
But you didn't dare to ask 2 weeks in a row to be away from me, I imagine.
Yeah,
yes.
I had to get my John Hansen fix at some point.
I appreciate that. How's everything going, Curtis? Things going really well?
Yeah, really well. Really well. Baseball season picking up.
Can you
really
believe it? I know. I still can't believe it's actually happening. But thank God Roger has the countdown going on his Facebook page. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sure.
It's not just his Facebook page. It's his Twitter. It's his Instagram. Well, it's all over the place.
Well, if there's one guy, one older gentleman, not older gentleman, Roger, but you know, a middle-aged guy who is keeping up on the social media. It's Roger Battis. You really should teach a class on it, Roger.
Oh, teach a class.
Yeah.
Press this button, and they all look, which one?
Yeah, but you're really good at it. You know, a lot of folks, you know, of your age, 45, which is my guess for your age, and you know, aren't quite as apt at the social media, but you're on it.
Well, there's a couple of ways to look at it. One, I have way too much free time.
Okay.
That's one way of looking at it,
right?
Because I'm semi retired.
Mm-hmm.
The other is that I don't have a legitimate hobby.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying?
You don't have a passionate side hobby of yours?
I don't really read anymore like I used to. I have the TV on, but it's in the background while I'm on the social media.
Instead of reading the great works of art or the great works of literature.
Right,
he's checking out the new Instagram photos. Yeah.
I'm making my own great work of literature. There you go. Called Facebook.
Yeah. There you go. You know, Roger, it started as a point of pride for me to talk to you about how good you are at social media. Now I'm wondering if you've completely you've done it wrong.
I'm totally wrong.
You've got
kidding?
This time and you're just tweeting.
Well, when my son comes out of his room because he sees what I post on Facebook, he just, when he walks by, he just kind of shakes his head and puts his hand to his face and just like, you know, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know, just, you're ruining it for everyone else.
Well,
just get off.
No, we enjoy it. We enjoy it, Roger. What we're going to do now to start the show is something, I like to have a little fun when we start the show. Obviously, Dave Plyer has all the great guests and has all the great conversations. It's a real big step down when I fill in for Dave. So,
Yes. And we want to remind everyone that it's not, Dave is not like gone.
Oh,
He'll be back at the end of the month, I think, right, Curtis?
Yes,
something like that?
Yeah, that's correct. He's filling in for WGN Nightside on Friday nights the next few weeks.
Oh, because he was on with Elliot on Friday night.
Yeah,
there.
And he was on with Elliot, and he's kind of excited because he's reunited with Michael Heidemann, one of his
original producers.
Yeah.
And he's got someone from Channel 9 coming on with him.
Larry Potash.
Larry Potash will be on
next week.
Yeah.
I think it's next
him
week.
And Larry Potash.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be a good one. Yeah. I will not be in next week because I will be in Vegas. So I have no idea who's in for Plyer next week, but I will not be that person. I'll tell you that much. I'll call in if you guys want. What time is it in Vegas? It'll be about midnight on Saturday.
Yeah, 2 hours, 2 hours after us. Yeah.
That's no good.
But you'll have to turn your clock. Spring forward.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. That's right.
That's right.
Next week we spring
forward. Is it the 10th, I think?
So I'm losing an hour in Vegas on my Saturday night.
Yeah.
God damn. I don't like the spring forward anymore. I used to be a real thing I love. Not just because of that. But, you know, when I think most of us love spring forward because you get the extra hour of light at night.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But for me, someone who works on a morning show, I like the light. You know, the darkness earlier,
now because it makes me more ready for bed. I mean, I don't hate it in the dead of summer. It's kind of nice when it's light till 8:30, 9 o'clock. But man, in the morning, we're just starting to get to sunrise is around 6:22, 6:20. And for me, I spend all my show, the morning show on the U, outside talking to people out in the streets or in game. I love when the sun's coming up early in the morning. And now we got to wait until 7:15, 7:20 after next week. So, but eventually it'll all even out. And at the end of the day, more daylight is a good thing. Don't get me wrong. But I've always enjoyed, I used to enjoy the later hours of sun, but now I wish the opposite.
And it'll be a lot warmer.
So that'll be next week.
Yeah.
So then whoever's in, so then.
They're going to lose an hour of the show?
Yes, it'll only be a 2-hour show. Man, I wish I just get paid for three. And so next week it'll be. You know, it's interesting. When I used to do traffic, I remember I got really unlucky. I can't remember exactly how it worked out, but I think that I had to do. After the spring forward one year, I had to, I was on the next morning at 6 a.m., so I lost an hour of sleep.
Right.
And then one, on the fall back, I was working the overnight, so I had to work the extra hour.
That's this shift. When it does fall back, it's always on a Sunday.
Yes.
Right. This becomes a 4-hour show.
Right.
When they do the fallback, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you get benefited next week, Curtis, because you'll lose the hour. That'll be nice. Well, we've just about lost an hour of programming talking about this. Now, 312-91-7200. Love for you to join the conversation. Let's start with a little fun. Let's go ahead and finish that headline. I'm on 720 WGN. I always love playing this game. Roger, I think you played it with me before.
Yeah.
Curtis, I don't think you have. This is our first time playing together.
Uh-huh. I played a few other games, but not this one.
Yeah, you played a few games in your day, yeah. It's really simple. I'm going to give you part of a news story, and I want you to finish the headline or find the twist of the story before everyone else can. 312-981-7200. Callers also welcome on in, or you can text as well. Just don't drive and text. Let's start with a story. This comes from last weekend or the 26th. So, yeah, just about last weekend or so. You remember we had those real high winds across the area, the whole Midwest? This comes out of Indiana. So real strong winds rolled through central Indiana last weekend. And, you know, when you get high speeds, you get lawn furniture thrown around.
Yeah, sure,
you know, you get sometimes some street lights that get knocked down. Well, probably the most ironic thing to get knocked down in the town of New Palestine, Indiana, fell to the ground. What would be really ironic for to fall down and collapse in town from high-speed winds? Doesn't seem like it should. Seems like it should still be there during high-speed winds. In fact, it'd be pretty important for the town for this thing to be there during the highest winds of all. 312-981-7200. Roger, any guesses? You look perplexed.
Well, I thought it might have something to do with the name of the town, New Palestine.
No.
I was thinking maybe there's a large cross on the top of
the
church.
That's a good guess, though. I see what you're saying there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that to knock on down.
I'm thinking winds. Maybe there's a windmill in town somewhere.
That's what I was thinking,
It's a good guess, but that is not the answer, no. It's not a windmill, although you see those crazy videos of when those windmills for energy get knocked on down.
Huge ones out in the farm
or
field.
Or if the propeller gets out of whack or something, and you just watch it self-destruct. Now, so what would you definitely not want knocked down?
I think I know.
You think you know? I'll give you a little bit of a clue, Roger. You hold that in there because Curtis still has no clue.
Okay.
I'm still clueless.
For the last couple months, one of these things would be pretty useless. But in the next couple months, they're pretty useful.
Yeah.
And it's not good to have this thing knocked down. We got to. Continue to see if we can get some responses. Dodger, don't answer yet.
No,
we're gonna get some callers coming
in. Let's
see
who's
out there. Seems like your light was blinking on.
About a 20-watt light.
This one of those. It's not even incandescent anymore.
It was like a night
light. Low LED. Yes, exactly. That's the light in Roger Badish's head. Some of us have got a nice floodlight.
Yeah, right.
Roger's you're the one that you have in the little bathroom nightlight, Roger.
It's a little light on the end of your key fob.
Right.
You know? I can see where I'm going.
That's the Roger idea light. Mm-hmm. This thing that got knocked down, by the way, was more than 60 years old. So it's been there a while. Let's go to the phone lines. Dave, you're on WGN. What's your guess here?
I'm going to say it's the antenna on top of Roger's house because he doesn't have cable.
I was having a little trouble getting signals when it went down. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Hey, he said something over 60 years old. I thought of Roger. But then I
By the way, this voice sounds very familiar, Dave. Yeah, how are you doing?
Brian Noonan.
Oh, it's Brian. It's Noonan.
Dave, Noonan's up early to get the cakes down in New Orleans. Yeah, he's standing in line.
It's Mike McConnell. Yes. No, I'm kidding.
Dave, why the hell aren't you here? I woke up from a nap and I saw your joke on Facebook that you thought you still had the shift tonight, and I thought, oh, I get to go right back to bed. This is wonderful. I had to ask Curtis. He's like, no, he was joking. How you doing, Dave?
I was joking.
The text lines are lighting up, Dave. Everyone wants to know when they're going to hear from you again, but they can hear you on Friday nights, right? For right now, just for a little while.
For the next couple weeks, and then I'll be back in September, which is fabulous. I mean, I'm very excited about it.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding.
We miss you, Dave.
No, stop it. You're embarrassing me. You do such a great job, John. I love listening.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm just trying to keep the needle going until 5 a.m. You know how radio works. You book all these guests. It's half of them, I think, came from the dead to do your show. And here it's just me and Roger talking news stories. You have Lucille Ball next week, don't you? I hear she's coming on.
I've got William Frawley. I've got William Frawley, which I'm very excited about. He's got his pants about halfway up his chest. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, Dave.
Oh, well, everyone coughed up a lung on this one.
Dave, everyone misses you. I mean, do you want to stay on for the next 2 hours and 48 minutes?
I'm going to bed. I have a great show, everybody.
All right, Dave.
See you, Dave.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
Oh, I love that man.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I love him so much, I wish he was in this chair right now.
Yeah, you know what he forgot to do?
What's that?
He forgot to make a legitimate guess.
Oh, I don't think he had one.
Yeah, <no.
laughs> All right, so this thing had been standing in New Palestine, Indiana for 60 years, and high winds knocked it down. That's a problem.
Yeah.
This thing's needed during high winds. This is what it's there for. Call in 312-91-7200. I had a guess of a wall. No, not a wall. I mean, that'd be bad, yeah. I mean, that's a good guess, but it's something that could be useful in the next couple months.
I'll give you
a clue as I go to commercial break.
Okay.
Tom Skilling would not be happy that this thing got knocked down.
No,
we'll be back
after
this here on 720 WGN. Yeah. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Dave Plyer. New Palestine, Indiana, the winds blew something down. Pretty important to have during a high-speed situation. We're finishing the headline. We're going to go to Steve. Steve, you're on WGN. What's your guess?
It would be the weather tower.
The weather tower? So like where you have the Doppler radar and stuff like that?
Yeah.
That is a great guess. You're close, but we're going to say no cigar on that one, Steve. He's getting there, though. He's warming up, just like the weather tower says. Let's go to here in Illinois to Huntley, up right by Route 47. Howard, how you doing? You're on WGN.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. All right. What's your guess? What blew away?
I'm thinking the village's emergency warning tower.
Yes.
The siren.
The tornado siren blew away. Howard got the answer correct. Howard, congratulations. You get my admiration and nothing else. How about that?
I've done better, but that's a good thing. Thank you.
Let me tell you, Howard, you've done way better. Thank you very much. Howard, how are things going out there in the far northwest suburbs?
It's beautiful, but too cold. It's spring. Where did spring go?
I know. My grandmother, may she rest in peace, she used to live out in Del Webb, and I'd go golfing out there a bunch of times.
Whispering Creek, I think they call it.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful area.
Yeah.
We'll need all the warning towers soon. We're heading into that season.
Exactly. All right, Howard, thanks so much for the phone call. Thanks for congratulations on the win there. 720 WGN. Yeah, Roger, was that going to be your guess,
by the
way?
Exactly, the siren. I was going to guess the siren.
Picturing the Roger Badish Idea Light as a key fob light flasher.
You know how I keep it lit?
How's that?
I just hit the side of my head every so often.
Ow! When the battery's running out,
it kind of flickers a little bit.
Crack that thing a few times.
It goes back on.
Right, because it's not solar powered, as we know. You work all
heavens,
the evening shifts.
No, please.
But I just drain. You know, no, maybe it is solar power, because by about 4:30 in the morning, you're really pretty dim.
Yeah, you got that right.
All right, so let's do another finish the headline here. This one starts out, I don't want to say in a sad way. I mean, it does. It starts in a sad way, but it goes from there in something. Well, I'll just tell the darn thing. Okay. So, obviously, we're getting to a point now where we've lost, unfortunately, a lot of our great generation World War II veterans. And as time passes on, we start to lose, unfortunately, some great men who served overseas in the Korean War. And besides the tragedy of all that and losing family members, there is a hazard. Oh, this one comes out of Indiana as well. Down in Indianapolis, Indiana, they are seeing a lot more of these sorts of 911 calls on the rise. So this is after someone has passed on. They leave something behind that is causing a lot of emergency issues in Indianapolis, Indiana, but I imagine it's all over the place. This one's kind of hard to describe, but so the loved ones is dead and gone. They've been buried, and then through the house, there seems to be another problem that arises shortly after a military veteran passes away. This one's a little bit hard to guess through. Curtis, you got any questions, any guesses?
This might sound a little morbid, but my guess would be like ghost.
No ghost call. But that's a great one. Yeah, are people seeing, you know, their lost ones or something like that? Roger, I see the mic on. What are you thinking?
Wow, this is a tough one. I would say something that they find in the home that's awkward to find.
Yeah, it would definitely be a little
unsettling.
Awkward. Unsettling would be a good answer, perhaps. It's causing a lot of emergency calls that we have. 312-981-7200. Got the phone lines getting up. I'll let Curtis answer that. But
I was going to say, like, their service uniform, but probably buried in it.
Or something.
And if they're getting emergency calls...
Well, I'll tell you what, Roger. Don't guess, because I don't want you to guess the right answer.
Okay.
Not expecting that. Yeah, but let's go to the phone lines here. Roby, you're on 720. What's your guess?
My guess is live hand grenades.
Yes, that is the guess. That is the answer. Congratulations. I don't know if you've experienced that, Roby, or you had someone that had a grenade. Walk us through how you knew that one. Just a good guess.
My dad, Korea, same thing. Sent home a couple of live hand grenades.
Is your dad still with us here, or is he?
No, he's passed.
He's passed
quite a long time ago.
Okay.
My sister came up with this box and said, "What are these?" And I said, "You don't want to mess with them."
Did you guys call them in, or did you just keep them?
No, I gave them. I turned them over.
Yeah, you turned them over. That's what you're supposed to do. And that's what is happening out of Indianapolis, although I imagine it's happening in homes across the country. They actually bring out the bomb squad to make sure that it's okay and all safe and disarmed. And usually what they'll do is if they find out that it's not a live one or if they've properly disabled it, they will return it back to the families. It just takes some time. And so it can be a memento for them. But, yeah, I mean, that's a real dangerous situation that people have just kind of sitting in their house without even knowing it.
Absolutely.
Well, Roby, we appreciate the phone call here on 720 WGN.
No problem.
Thank your father, obviously, and for his service. And again, I don't mean to make light, of course, of our wonderful vets who have passed on. But a lot of them, my grandfather, again, may he rest in peace. Both my grandfathers served in World War II, and my grandfather came home with I think his weapons were in the house. If I can remember, like, his guns. I remember just a lot of guns mounted on the walls, and they looked like military rifles. I don't know. I don't know if they got. If you have to return those on your way out, I don't know how
that works.
Well, it's
government property, but I know my dad had a knife from World War II that had to have been his issue, and he did have a grenade.
Really?
It was painted blue, so it may have been a dud, like ones they would throw like in training. Because he was in charge of a troop for training. He was a captain. And so it might have been from that because, it was all in one shape.
Yeah.
But it was painted blue, and he kept that down in his workroom.
Interesting.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's so, I'm not so, I guess a lot of folks brought home the live grenades. Now, most of the ones they find when they get called in, they say 99 out of 100 are not live. But they do find live grenades still. So, just be careful about
Very
that.
Very interesting.
The house. All right, let's do one more really quickly, because I don't think we have a break before the news, Curtis. Do we? We can do one more?
One more really quick.
All right, really quickly. Okay, this one's easy. A man accidentally caught his wife cheating on him, and I say accidentally, because he stumbled upon her cheating on him in a really unique and 21st century way. 312-91-7200. How could you catch your wife cheating on you in a very 21st century way. And I'll also say it wasn't live, so it's not like FaceTime or, you know, anything like that. It's not like he caught it happening in the act, but it was a couple weeks later, a couple months later, he happened to catch his wife cheating in a very interesting way.
Is it on any sort of technology, like digital technology?
Yeah, that you're getting there. So if you start,
I know what it is.
You go ahead, Roger. We told
no, I'm not going to say. Do you want to have someone call you or just want me to say it?
Well, I
want to
hit your news on time, Roger. Oh, okay, so if you can get us the answer, you go ahead.
Did he find it on, like, Tinder and he was flipping across and there she was?
No, that's a great, that's a good guess, though. Okay. That you, yeah, you don't, if you're not single, don't be on the dating apps. Yeah.
Right.
Like, Roger, I know you're on Twitter, but you're not on Tinder,
no,
right?
I don't even know what the heck that... I hear you guys talking about it, all you young guys.
Roger, you'd be more of a Bumble sort of guy.
What the heck's
like
a Bumble?
Well, Roger, well, Bumble
that Bumble
is,
be the Transformer?
No. Bumble is where the... So you're on the app and women are on the app, and women... You can't message a woman. A woman has to message you. That's like the thing of Bumble, if I got
it right down.
Yeah. So you guys can, like, match up, but then you can't reach out to her and be... A creep. Not that you would, Roger. Not that you are. But
then, well, all that stuff. You know, I've got Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and emails, and my brain's ready to explode. So that's it. Don't give me any... No.
630 had an interesting guess. iPass. That's an interesting one. Like checking maybe the receipts were coming through of which tollways you were going through. That's a good guess. It's not the answer.
Yeah.
But
credit cards?
No, that's another great guess. It wasn't credit cards. I'll tell you what, why don't we wrap up this and we'll get the answer after the news break. So you got to stick with us. It's a really ingenious and accidental way you can find out if someone is cheating on you. But it is 2:30, which means it's news time and we go to the newsroom. Here's Roger Mattish. The stories that matter, says Roger, and the ones that don't either. 312-981-7200. Call in, text in. Join the conversation with us here on this Sunday morning. John Hansen here in for Dave Plyer till 5 a.m. And really quickly, we were talking about that last headline, finish the headline game of a man catching his wife cheating on him. And it actually happened 4 years. The cheating had been going on for 4 years. And he found evidence from 4 years in the past about how his wife was cheating on him. And it was done in a very 21st century way. Those are your clues so far. I'll give you one more clue as we welcome in Blake Stubbs here to WGN. Blake, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, John. How about yourself?
Good. I'm going to have you try and guess. I don't know if you've been paying attention here. I know you're getting ready for the segment. But, yeah, so a man caught his wife cheating. This happened in Peru. This man himself was planning out his day. I'll say that. He was planning out his day, and he found in a very 21st century way that his wife had been cheating on him for 4 years. Photographic evidence of his wife cheating on him. And how did he stumble upon that? Do you have any guesses, Blake?
I'm going to say that it's something to do with a cell phone.
Okay.
I can't go any deeper than that. I mean...
No, he wasn't digging through old photos or anything, and it wasn't...
Okay.
It could be on... He could have found this on a cell phone. He could have found it on his desktop computer. There's a few different ways he could have found this. He was about to go to a store he had never been to before. So he's like, I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to look at this thing.
Victoria's Secret.
Internet search history.
No, not internet search history. What did you say, Interpol, Roger?
No, Victoria's Secret.
Oh, Victoria's Secret. No, no.
Maybe
no,
buying
oh,
her
like
something?
That was the, no, it wasn't that. It was photographic evidence he saw on his computer.
Is it in the cloud?
It is not in the cloud, no. So it's nothing that she had uploaded or anything along those lines. He had stumbled upon it. Some might even say this is a very Big Brother way of finding someone cheating on you.
Security camera footage?
You're getting closer.
Oh, is it like a Google Maps?
Yes,
like
Google Maps. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
This guy was going to go to a place he hadn't been to before in town, and he just wanted to kind of look out his route. I don't know if you guys do that. I'll do that when I'm going to a new place. I'll enter the address. I'll see what the route is, and then I'll kind of be like, I want to see what this building looks like so I can see it when I know what it is when I get there. So you drop yourself on the little map, and it gives you the view. If you've never done this before, it's really Big Brother-y, and you spin around and you look, you can just see what it looks like from the street. Well, there in the street, off the street,
a window?
No, on a on a bench was a man laying down on the bench, and on the end of the bench was a woman, and the man was laying in her lap. Just tenderly in there, and she was touching his face in one photo and kissing him in another. The photos were back to 2013, so this guy has been going on for 5 years. He confronted his wife. The affair was still going on, and he had to find out via Google Street View. So, there's a lesson for you. So if you're, you know, if you're a crazy jealous person, just pin yourself on the street and just like walk around your town and just scour around and see if you, that might be the craziest thing ever to do. But if you have your suspicions, that's one way to find out, I guess. I mean, just think of the chances. They had to have that Google car. Have you seen that thing driving around? It's pretty funny when you see it. Give it a good wave.
Oh, yeah.
You're on candid camera. And, and even the, it's interesting because her face, they try to blur out faces when they can. And they, she has a very distinctive hairstyle. I'm looking at the photos now. So he knew for sure it was her and clothing that he had bought her and all this stuff. And as a, just one more little jab, the bench where his wife and lover were sat was, right by an, a street called Puente de los Suspiros, which, translates to the Bridge of Sighs. So there you go.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rough, man.
So let's all do that now. Everyone on three. Everyone's going to sigh. Ready? One, two, three.
All right. Let's talk about. Well, Blake, we always come here on to talk about movies, all sorts of things. You were on with me on with John Williams Friday afternoon. We talked a little Greta. We even talked about how this is kind of a lull in the movie in industry. Did you get a chance to go out and see the movies this weekend, or was this an off weekend for you and going to the films?
Bit of an off week. Well, you ever had one of those weekends where you thought you had it planned out and then it just takes a complete left turn and you got to reorganize it?
Every time WGN calls me,
seeing, and WGN, that was not the only reason that I didn't see Greta today or yesterday, but I will probably be seeing it this afternoon.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll get a chance to give you some thoughts. It's got some acting talent in the movie, Isabelle Huppert as well as Chloe Grace Moretz. I'm a big fan of both of them, so I'm hoping that it's good. I'm hearing some decent things, so we'll see.
And next weekend, they got a big release too coming out, right?
Yes, we do. And in fact, we actually kind of teased talking a little bit about that movie. It's going to be Captain Marvel, the 21st. That's right, the 21st film released in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and the first to have a female lead, and that is Brie Larson, who won Best Actress for Room a couple of years back. So I'm anticipating this movie. I was hoping they'd cast her in this role when they announced they were making the movie. Once they did, I mean, not only did I feel like a huge nerd and happy and excited that I guessed correctly, but also she's an excellent actress, fantastic talent. And I think that the visuals that I've seen in the trailer for this movie, I think audiences are going to be in for a treat.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, that's going to be kind of a kickoff precursor, I think, to the real big blockbuster season that is lined up for this year.
Yeah, and is it usually a lull after the awards season? That used to be, I think, a more... I guess the question I'm asking is, you know how like there used to be a real set calendar for when certain movies would come out, that you'd have your blockbusters in the summer, you'd have your award-winning potentials maybe late in the fall or nearer to where awards are announced or voted upon. Does it still follow that formula, or is that breaking down a little bit?
It breaks down a little bit only because of the volume of content that the likes of Disney are putting out. For example, you know, they have a Star Wars film coming out this year. There's an Avengers film coming out this year. You have Captain Marvel coming out this year, amongst other things. So, I mean, there's a whole, they have to spread it out so that they don't over compete with each other. For example, like Captain Marvel, you know, will debut here on March 8th. That's the debut date, but it'll probably come out the Thursday before the Friday. That's usually how it works nowadays because they don't do midnight screenings as often anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so, what you're probably going to end up seeing is Captain Marvel will have a long theatrical run. By the time, and the exact date escapes me on Avengers Endgame, but Captain Marvel will probably still be in theaters when Endgame debuts. And they want to make sure that there's enough spread time between them so that Captain Marvel can have its run. And then they go back, and she will be appearing in Endgame so that, you know, by the time you've had ample time to see it, have a complete introduction to this character, hear her story, see her story, and then, you know, and so they're trying to make sure that when they lay out their calendar, Disney's kind of one of the big outliers of that old system. You know, that whole thing where you'd have the award season would come to an end, and then you'd see some things get released because they're not trying to compete with blockbusters. For example, if I remember correctly, Get Out, which won an Oscar for original screenplay, Jordan Peele won, and he also directed that film. That was released very early in the year, but well before the blockbusters were dropped.
Mm-hmm.
So it was able to find its audience without having to compete with things that were going to, you know, basically take all the money away from it. And they managed to get it out shortly after the Oscar season, but right before the big blockbuster season kicked off.
Interesting.
So, and the exact date escapes me, but yeah, there is still a little bit of a window there. It's just Disney has they're kind of bucking the system, so to speak, because of their calendar. It has more to do with what they're trying to release than, mm-hmm. you know, a big trend, I think, in the industry.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. Blake, I wanted to tee this up, and we'll continue talking about it more after the break. But I've been, this cold weather that we're getting, this extra spell of winter into the meteorological part of spring, has me on the verge of tears. So I thought it'd be a really good thing to talk with you about. You know, movies evoke so many emotions, and we talk about comedies around the holidays. We talk about best holiday movies. But every now and then, you need a good cry. And you know, film, like no other medium, I think, really has, they really know, a great filmmaker knows how to evoke that emotion from people. So I was hoping that we could chat through some of the best movies that make you cry, Blake. I know you're not one above shedding a tear or two.
You know what? I was explaining this to someone today. You know, as a person who watches a lot of movies, I, when I was younger, didn't really cry during movies. I devoured them, you know, I watched them for how they were put together technically, and I tried to learn everything I can, and that's formulated a lot of my opinions of how I take films in. Since I've hit my 30s, man, I have not had a problem emotionally connecting with films.
Right.
And if it's good, I will cry. So yeah, I don't have a problem admitting that I've shed some tears when I've been at the theater, or, you know, when I've watched something at home. I don't have a problem admitting that. I think it's good to connect and feel and, experience the art in a way outside of just looking at it from like a technical standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, those performances, if they're that good, they should make you feel something.
And I see a good movie that makes me cry, usually what does it for me is obviously the acting, the storyline, all that stuff. But man, those composers really know how to do it. I mean, that's always what gets you. Like, and I always wonder, you know, if some of the music wasn't, this is where they earn their big bucks. You know, if you take some scenes and you take that music out of that scene, it still may evoke some emotion, but that, I think what the score does and a great composer does, it kind of, you know, like maybe the actors and the setting and the script get you to the 20-yard line, get you in the red zone, but that score is what pushes you into the end zone and full-on ugly crying.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you want a few names, you know, of scores you can find and listen to, I always tell people look into the works of Jerry Goldsmith. I always tell them look into Hans Zimmer, who I'm sure more people out there have listened to than almost any other composer, except for probably John Williams,
right,
who I would also put on that short list. There have been a lot of great composers who have put music behind things that just, if you have a great performance in a movie, that's one thing. But if you're able to amplify it through, you know, the music kind of guiding you through how your emotions are unfolding while you're watching it, oh, man, yeah, waterworks are going to kick in.
All right, there's no question.
Absolutely.
So 312-981-7200. You can text on in, but we love phone calls as well, joining the conversation. I want Roger to think real deep.
I've got my list
crank
already.
Crank up that keychain light, Roger, for some really good ideas.
This one I had no problems with. I put, without even having to double check, I had about 10 on my list already.
All right, well, you hold them, Curtis. You got some on the list as well. We're going to take a quick commercial break and then more with Blake Stubbs and everyone else here on 720 WGN.
Hey, Dad? You want to have a catch?
Oh, the waterworks! Feel the dreams! Blake Stubbs, are you crying? I don't know if that one did it for you, but the swelling music. Nice job, Curtis, getting that clip. I appreciate that. Go ahead, Blake.
I was actually going to point out that, you know, I think it's easier to talk about these things now as an adult male, but there was a point where the only movies that males in my life were ever willing to admit they cried at were sports movies. Mm-hmm. Field of Dreams was, like, definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Rudy is another one.
Oh, Rudy!
Yeah, that's a big one. And Brian's Song. That's probably the one. I think my dad even admitted he cried to that one.
So yeah, like, Carl was talking about that.
And I didn't watch it with him. But yeah, one of those things where sports movies, man, it's such a big kicker for dudes out there. And I don't think any guy out there can say they haven't at least, you know, shed a tear over something like Rudy or Field of Dreams. Absolutely.
847 just texted and just watched Fault in Our Stars, which I don't know, Blake. I don't know if you know that one. Fault.
I'm familiar with that one, yes.
And yeah. Had a good cry. Another is Terms of Endearment, which I know, and I'm sure I've shed a tear or two over. But Fault in Our Stars, I'll have to watch that one. We appreciate the text. 312-91-7200. Oh, by the way, John Hansen here, and for Dave Plyer, till 5 in the morning. What movie do you watch that just gives you a good cry? Let us know. So, Roger, you mentioned you had a list of 10. Let's get a couple that'll get the waterworks going. Because, Roger, you're like me. You're an emotional guy. You wear your heart on your sleeve. And
extremely emotional.
You and I could probably have a good cry over some movies. What are some that get you going?
Well, I'm going back a ways to a musical.
Okay.
This is a Broadway musical made into a movie, Carousel.
Carousel.
At the end.
Carousel.
When he starts singing, when they all start singing, when you walk, right?
Oh, I don't know Carousel.
You don't?
I'm sorry, Roger.
Okay. All right, so.
Don't cry, just because I don't know it.
So, the father, who's a barker, he has a child with this girl that he has not married yet. And he goes to heaven. And in heaven, he gets a second chance. He's always kind of a braggadocious kind of guy. And he gets a chance to go back and see the mother of his child and the girl who's now grown up and having troubles of her own fitting in.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very wild and everything. And there's this beautiful ballet segment in the middle of this. And so... But at the end, she's at their school graduation, and she is now making friends with the people, her classmates, who were against her before. And he has to, now that he's made everything right, he now must go back to heaven.
Mm.
And there's a beautiful song at the end that all the kids are singing, the parents are singing, all the people are singing, and I'm blubbering.
You're almost blubbering now, Roger.
I'm
talking
blubbering.
About it.
I'm just like, there's not enough Kleenex in the world to keep me going here. The other one, To Sir With Love. At the end, they're at the party, the graduation, they hand him the gift, and they're all, and again, having been a teacher, I know this feeling, and... See, I'm losing it already.
Oh, right. Do you need me to fill some time? Or?
No, I'm okay. But it's just at the end when he goes back to his room, I'm just, again, the floodgates have opened up.
Well, you mentioned being a teacher. For me, Dead Poets Society. And Blake, you and I have watched that one.
Yes.
That one, Leo, that Captain, was, I Captain Moment. Blake, that's got to be on your list somewhere.
Well, that is not.
I was definitely going to bring that one up. Robin Williams.
One of his greatest performances.
It is, and for all of his brilliance as a comedian, and he is one of the all-time greats in my book, when he went dramatic, he really knew how to make you care. And Dead Poets Society, that performance, the movie's a heartbreaking movie in a lot of ways. But the way his final, you know, exit, it just tears me up.
Yeah.
Hey, and again, I've seen that movie I don't know how many times since I was, you know, probably 14 years old. But now when I watch it, I see it a whole different way.
Yeah, and that one, they toy with you with that score, though, too, with the Irish, with the bagpipes and that sort of feel to it. It can really get you, kind of like Rudy does as well. Hey, we're going to have plenty of time for myself, Roger, and Blake to talk more about this, but let's get on the phone lines. What are some movies that make you cry?
Hi. So for me, I really can't even watch it again because it was that traumatic with The Passion of Christ.
Oh, yeah.
And, I went with my cousin, and the first time I saw it, it was horrible. I I think it was like 20 minutes in, and she just like hit me. She's like, would you get a hold of yourself? And she's like, we have 2 more hours of this. I mean, it was that bad.
Yeah.
And very sad. And then another one for me definitely was Brian's song. Yeah. I mean, I just couldn't get past that. I just like, why did he have to die? It was just so sad. And then recently, A Star Is Born, the remake with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. That really, really, I mean, that just, so that movie was so touching, and it just was so sad.
So, Paige, even in a crowded theater, you have no problems letting the waterworks go.
Well, it's kind of hard not to sometimes. I mean, no, I mean, but I, you know, it's just, it's very hard. I mean, especially, you know, like when with someone about A Star Is Born. I mean, I got to tell you, for me, that movie was the first movie in a very long time where I was watching it as though I was in love with the characters. Like, it wasn't Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. It literally was those two. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Where I was almost like, I'd love to go see his concert, like Jackson or whatever.
Right. Was in there. You really got lost in it.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, and that to me is a sign of a good movie. When you can forget that they're acting, and you're just in love with them as, you know, their character, it was just absolutely amazing, but very sad.
Yeah, Paige, we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. Blake.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, Paige, and thanks for listening. And Blake, I think she hit it on the head. I think that we only really cry in the movies where we do get lost in them.
Yes. And sometimes, you know, as an audience member, and again, I want to echo her sentiments about Bradley Cooper's performance, and Lady Gaga as well, but Cooper was kind of ignored during the awards season. You know, he co-wrote, he directed, he produced, and he starred in this movie, and it was probably one of my favorite performances of the year. Unfortunately, trophies didn't come along with it, but you know, Bradley, if you're out there listening, man, you killed it. Bring more of that. I want more of that. Audiences want more of that. And I think that when the characters are that fleshed out, when they're that well performed, when you experience their arc in full, as you do with his character in that film, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it can make you feel as an audience member. There's another film similar to that. That I don't want to say it's forgotten. It is very well received critically, and anyone I know who's ever seen it really liked it. It was called 50-50, and it starred Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah,
oh yes, Gordon-Levitt, I
Seth
remember.
Rogen, Angelica Houston, Anna Kendrick. It's a star-studded cast, but it's about a young man who, at like 27 years old, which was I was a little younger than that when it came out. He is diagnosed with cancer, an aggressive form of cancer, that is like, it's in his back, and the surgery that they are going to perform on him has a 50-50 chance of killing him. And it's a choice, like, are you going to go through with it or not? And there was a scene, I saw that with a whole group of friends, and there is a particular scene in the movie right before he goes into surgery where he is trying to talk to his mother and his father, who is inflicted, I believe, with Alzheimer's, and he just starts crying and like pulls her in and is hugging her and talking about how scared he is. And for me personally, and this is where, you know, sometimes the waterworks, they just come, as I believe Paige just said, I completely lost it. I was a sick kid when I was younger. I went through 4 sinus surgeries. The first one, I think I was only like 9 years old, 10 years old. And I didn't know what the heck was happening. You know what I mean? Like I'd been sick. I'd been in hospitals. But I had never like voluntarily gone under anesthesia at the time, and I was scared. I cried. I hugged my mom, my dad. I didn't know, and it was just like seeing that depicted in a film. Now, granted, it was for it was a different condition
still,
entirely. But
for
I
a 9-year-old though,
yeah, I related to it so well, and of course it was, you know, 15-plus years removed from that, but I remember just sitting there, like, crying my eyes out, and all these people I was with, dear friends of mine, all theater folks, because I worked in theater when this movie came out, you know, who are criers. They know how to cry, man. They're looking at me like, are you okay, dude?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm totally fine. I am fine. This is great. Yeah, and honestly, I love the film for that reason.
You know, it's interesting. You're right. I think we each cry at different things, of course. And the ones that really get you going kind of uncontrollably, maybe you have some relation to it. It's so amazing you mentioned 50-50, Blake. Not only had I forgotten about that movie, but it is actually the first movie I ever saw by myself in an empty theater. I was the only one seeing it. I saw it like on a Monday afternoon. I had a random day off. I was in Champaign, actually. And I just went and I was like, I'll go see this movie. It's a Get Good Ruth. And I remember bawling in it and looking around being like, well, thank God I'm the only one in this theater so no one else can see it, although I'm sure everyone else would have been too. A few quick texts. We're going to continue this conversation after the news. 309 says Steel Magnolias gets them going, which is always true. Paige mentioned A Star Is Born, a recent movie. Another one, Bohemian Rhapsody City, when Freddie has to tell the news of his diagnosis. It's a Wonderful Life from the 708. Old Yeller from the 708 as well. Tell you what we're going to do. Blake, you can stick around, right? You don't got to go anywhere, right?
Absolutely.
All right, you grab some tissues. I'm going to put you on hold for a second. We're going to take the world's shortest commercial break and then get the news here on 720 WGN.
It's like what we used to sing every morning when I was a boy at school. Maybe you still sing it. When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high.
You know that one?
And don't be afraid of the dark.
Believe him, darling. Believe.
At the
still doing okay, Roger?
End of the storm.
Roger's head is down. Are you okay, Rog? I think we've lost Roger. Roger,
I loved you too.
Oh no, this is sad. You okay, Rog? Carousel, and Annette texted in too. The song is "You'll Never Walk Alone." And Roger, thanks for playing that. Are you okay, buddy? Yeah, he's. I get you. There's certain things that get you. Having not seen it, I couldn't visualize it. But
well, they're at the graduation, and the principal says about the song, and the students stand up and start singing, and he whispers again. He's a ghost. No one can see him. And so he kind of whispers to his daughter, who hasn't started to sing, and said, listen to the words, and she starts singing. Then he walks over to his wife and whispers in her ear, and it appears as though she can actually hear him. And she smiles, and it's Shirley Jones is the woman. And that's where you heard the higher voice start singing. And then he gets motioned over by one of the angels, and he has to go back to heaven.
Oh, Roger. That's... Ugh. 312-981-7200, movies to make you cry. Boy, I really hope it up the waterworks here. Blake, are you there? Can you talk right now? We're both crying here in the room. I'm only laughing not at you, Roger, at us.
You saw me as soon as I hear the first note of the song. It gets me every time. It just rips at my heart. It's one of
I was just going to add to this conversation because Roger's also talking about a work that really built its life on the stage.
Yes.
And as a person who's worked a lot of backstage and technical directed over 18 shows and things like that, like part of my professional life outside of talking about movies on the radio and making commercials for a living has been in the theater. When you get to see a show like Carousel and it's executed properly, and you're able to sit backstage and watch the audience because you've already watched the actors do their thing through rehearsal and everything, when you see people crying in the audience live to stuff like that, you know you've hit it on the head. And this song is one that I've seen live actually just tear an audience apart. So Roger's not alone.
Yeah.
John, don't feel bad because you just got brought into the club on this.
No,
thing,
yeah, no, I'm like, I don't know.
See this live because it can really get you really big time. I think I would argue in some cases even more than a film can.
Yeah,
depending on the production.
Depending on obviously. The production, exactly. Hey, a few texts we got. 815, I cried when Bambi's mother was killed. We don't have to say spoiler alert on that, right? That one's pretty well out there.
No.
That's been, if you haven't seen Bambi yet, sorry to ruin it for you. But I cry when I see John Bonham plays the drums and the song remains the same. I'm not familiar with that one, Carrie. Do you know that one, Blake? The song remains the same. Have you heard of that?
John Bonham playing the drums?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's music. Music and, I mean, yeah, the song, I haven't listened to that.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a song. Okay. Oh, I thought it was a movie.
Yeah. It's Led Zeppelin. I mean, yes, it's John Bonham from Led Zeppelin. But if you watch a live performance of it,
which
has been filmed, sometimes musicians and artists can evoke ever so much. I mean, we kind of touched on this a little bit with A Star Is Born.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of concert style footage. The final number that Lady Gaga sings in that, if you haven't already cried in the movie, when you are while watching that movie, you will when you watch her sing. I believe it's called I Will Never Love Again.
708 says,
I mean, they
708 has the big big chill.
Big chill.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. 708 also says a couple different ones. Gran Torino at Eastwood's funeral. And St. Vincent, when Bill Murray goes on, says present-day saint.
Oh, have you not seen that movie?
I have not seen that
movie. Oh, my goodness. He should have been nominated, seriously, for Best Actor Award in that. I'm not kidding. I found that on Prime last year, and I had heard little talk about it, and I just wanted to see what it was about. I was grabbed, and I was pulled in, and I could not leave that movie. Seriously, Bill Murray should have been nominated.
Blake, did you see it?
There was a lot of talk that he might have been when that film was originally released. Remember how earlier I mentioned sometimes movies get released and then you kind of have to,
mm-hmm.
you know, throw it up to the wind about whether the award season is going to remember it or not. St. Vincent was one of those movies that you know, the winds of award season just didn't really give the due that performance. So I'm with Roger on that one. Absolutely.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Julie. Julie, you got a top three movies that make you cry, right?
Oh, I got a lot of them, but I'll give you three. Patch Adams.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
I think that's one of Robin's best, too.
Mm-hmm.
Funny Girl.
Oh, yeah.
And The Green Mile.
Oh, that's, yeah, we had a couple of texts, and Blake,
The Way We Were and Bambi and Message in a Bottle.
Oh, yeah. We hadn't brought up The Green Mile yet, Julie. You didn't do anything wrong. Blake, I think you told me before we went on air that that's one of yours, right?
It is. It absolutely is. I think a lot of it has to do with that ensemble being so effective.
Yeah.
And the movie, it's one of those rare movies that it is long. Like, its running time is kind of long. However, it's a worthy endeavor to sit down and watch it from beginning to end and really care about what's going on in that movie. Every performance in that movie is stellar.
Julie,
and I think that's a big reason why.
Julie, do you like seeing movies that make you cry? Are you okay with it? Does it help?
I'm okay because I cry easy.
Yeah.
And you said the music really does a lot.
Yeah. Do you cry at commercials sometimes? Because every now and then I find myself doing that. Or back when
happy tears and sad tears.
Yes. When Oprah used to still be on, my mom watched Oprah. I couldn't get through an Oprah show without crying because she'd always have some inspiring story and she'd have a big surprise. I can't do it. Or when Ellen has a big surprise. Happy stuff often makes me cry more than the sad stuff does. It's more like the inspiring stories. Hey, Julie, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for listening.
Take care.
Yeah, anytime. Call on in. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but boy, this is going to... Any more criers that you got, folks, or if you want to hear the clip, 312-981-7200, we'll try and just play them one at a time this time. Quick commercial break here on 720 WGN.
Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson. You hear me? Sit down. Sit down. This is your final warning, Anderson. How dare you? You hear me?
Oh, Captain, my captain.
Mr. Overstreet, I warn you. Sit down. Sit down, all of you. I want you seated. Sit down. Leave, Mr. Keating. All of you, down. I want you seated. Do you hear me?
My God, Blake, what are we doing?
I'm going to need a minute.
Oh, and you know what? That movie it's a great movie. It's sad. That moment is so picturesque in many ways. But, oh, it's so much even worse watching it now with Robin gone.
That's true. And I don't want to derail our conversation because I have a Robin Williams movie to follow up. In after that clip, yeah. Maurice Jarre, I believe I might mispronounce his name, but Maurice Jarre did the music for that film. So it is not one of the big names that you probably recognize making, you know, music for films today. This man passed away in 2009. But just to throw a few other films at you, he composed all the music for Ghost, Witness with Harrison Ford, Dr. Zhivago, and Lawrence of Arabia. This man knew how to compose music for films. He was excellent at it. And I think the performances in Dead Poets, coupled with the music, as we've mentioned multiple times tonight, it's a home run. And the other film I want to piggyback the conversation just so we can throw more adoration toward Robin Williams and his excellent performances is the film he did win his Oscar for, which is Good Will Hunting.
Mm.
I think there's a little less in the music. It's more in the acting. Not that the music's bad in the film.
It's understated. They don't swell it.
Correct. And it's one of those where raw acting performances with an excellent script, which also won an Oscar, written by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. I got to be honest with you, man. This guy, when he turned it on and he wasn't doing just strictly comedy, he could make you laugh and he could break your heart in the same film. And he did in just about every film that he went for a dramatic role in. He couldn't just do solid drama. You know, that wasn't the only thing he was there for. And directors knew how to work with him, and they let him work. That was the other thing. Typically, he wasn't the type of actor who followed a word-for-word script. He did on some productions, but he was always given freedom because there was just an electricity with him. It was something that couldn't be denied. And I think mentioning, you know, if we're talking tearjerkers, I find there are fewer actors that have ever pushed me over the edge to cry or feel something than Robin Williams. So, yeah, you're right, John. It's harder now that he's gone.
Yeah, it is. That got that movie, and not to keep on harping on Dead Poets Society, there's better movies out there that Robin Williams has done, and it's, you know, there's parts of Dead Poets Society where it's a little, I don't want to say contrived, but they're clearly trying to evoke emotion. And sometimes I don't like when it's so obvious and it's so, but man, sure. I watched that movie. I know it came on the late 80s, early 90s. I don't know exactly when, but I didn't really watch it a few times till I was in college, and that, you know, you're at that same age of carpe diem, seize the day, and, you know, when you're 21, 20 years old, you think anything is possible, and, you know, we were young lads in college having a good time and thinking we were on to big and better. Oh, just that whole storyline just gets me. We have an interesting, just a lot of text coming in. Bette Midler, Wind Beneath My Wings, the song, saying she thinks the song, I think it's at, we have a two-part text. One is Homeward Bound, watching the dog making his way back home. Yeah. Oh, God, yes. Schindler's List, 405 text is in, obviously, and that has that movie you watch, and it's so powerful because you know how real it was, of course. That plays, obviously, a huge role in that. 630 says, two scenes in Tarzan the Musical, emotional enough to make one's cry if it's done right. When Tarzan decides to leave his family and sings with his mother, that's sad as well. Out of Africa, sob. The Departed, spoiler alert, Leo gets killed. The end of Ghost. A lot of It's a Wonderful Life for Harry's toast the end.
Yeah, can I go ahead. Final home run in The Natural.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Hitting the lights.
With the lights, the whole thing. Yeah, that's a big cinematic moment, I think. That was one that my grandmother pointed out to me at a young age. She was like, you got to watch The Natural.
Yeah.
And then finally I watched it with her, and I will always credit her. She's no longer with us, but I will always credit her for being one of the reasons I love film as much as I do.
Really?
And The Natural was one of the movies that she pointed me toward. And of course, she was one who, and later in life, she was unable to see, actually. She had macular degeneration that took a vast majority of her sight. And she could sit and hear quite fine and watch. She was basically, you know, in a bed for the last couple of years of her life, and she could hear any movie that she had seen in her life, and she could tell you who the actor was, she could tell you what the movie was, and more often than not, she'd probably tell you who directed it. So I feel like I get a lot of that trait from her.
Wow.
And I know that, you know, if one day my sight goes, I still want to be able to adore cinema the way she did. And John, you and I have had a conversation with someone who has enjoyed cinema as much, if not more than us, who didn't have sight once before on the radio here at WGN.
Oh, that's
it's a fascinating,
right.
Fascinating process, you know, that they're able to describe so much. A person who can't see watching cinema, it blows me away. I honestly, after we had that conversation, there were some emotions there. Because I realized that was something my grandma shared with the person who we had that conversation with. And it was like, how do you still enjoy it if you can't see it? Well, you can, wholeheartedly. And my grandma did. She could tell you every scene in the movie Giant, which was something that was mentioned in one of my latest appearances here on the station. It's an epic film. And she knew it almost frame by frame, even though she couldn't see it later in life.
We talk about movies making you cry at the end, but some get you right at the beginning. I saw on your list, Blake, Up. Ugh.
Yes. That was a big one.
The whole opening sequence. Yeah.
Why right out the gate? Come on, we're supposed to have fun off the start of a movie, you know?
Especially a cartoon.
People running around and having fun.
Especially a Disney movie.
Yeah. Come on, they're chasing each other. It should be fun. Quick action off the bat. Fall in love with the... Oh, God.
How about the...
That definitely is a real deep love story told in a very short span of time. And it I think audiences can find it so easily relatable, be it through their grandparents, through their own love story. It's just, it's so weird how something in such a short span of time can still be so epic in its nature. I don't want to overuse that word tonight, but I think that's a big reason why people connect with it so well.
Right.
There's many parts of this movie that you cry during the movie, but when in the balcony, everyone stands up to Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I love To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know,
absolutely,
Roger, you mentioned the standing up.
It's a heart-wrenching story.
Yeah. You mentioned the standing up and you mentioned the swelling of music. I think sometimes what movies get you are these epic moments where there's chanting all together, like, oh, Captain, my Captain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's these moments of everyone in together in unison doing something, whether it's Rudy. Those can really get you. You almost are like you're in that room with
that
them.
That, for me, is Miracle on Ice.
Oh, yeah.
Which happened about, actually, 40 years ago. That's, I think just over 40 years ago.
That was 1980, wasn't it? So, yeah.
Yes, 39, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
That one for me always gets me choked up. Another Disney one, Toy Story 3.
Ah, yeah, that's on Blake's list.
Very
I know
end,
that.
When they're about to be incinerated. Another one that hasn't been mentioned, A Dog's Purpose.
I don't know that one.
Have you seen that one, Blake?
It came out last year, didn't it?
That's not very old, right? That's
it's recent. 2015 or 2017, something like that.
Yeah, last year.
Okay.
Was that the one where they had concerns over how they forced the dogs to
Oh, right.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Maybe.
I think that's the one, yeah.
I don't remember, but I know the story itself is very kind of heartbreaking because it's a dog who goes through, basically it's narrated through from his perspective, and he goes through different lives with different dogs. But he starts out with a boy named Ethan, and then he comes back to the boy after he's all grown up, and he kind of at that point realizes what his purpose in life is after mm-hmm. going through all these different lives as different dogs throughout the 50 years or so.
E.T. gets me sometimes.
Oh
yeah. No, E.T., what a magical film E.T. is.
Yeah.
If you think about it. I mean, it came out in 1982. It's one of Spielberg's, you know, big ones, as far as formative ones that I saw at a young age and will never forget. But you know why E.T., I think, just absolutely slays the audience when they watch it? Henry Thomas's performance in that film as Elliot. And it's not just the puppeteering or anything like that. It's all great. That's all excellent. That young man's performance is so, I think, genuine for a child actor that anybody can watch it and connect. And there's you can look this up on YouTube. If you're listening, check it out as soon as we're, you know, done here. Watch his audition. You can watch Henry Thomas's audition for Elliot in E.T., and it will break your heart. Ugh. And it was just the audition. And I want to spoil one thing. The end of the clip, you don't see him at all on camera, but the end of the clip is Steven Spielberg telling him, well, kid, you got the job.
Oh, really?
It's one of the most Hollywood things I've ever seen. But not in a cheesy way.
Send me a link
to
that.
Just like a kid's dream completely comes true. And I'll get it to you.
All right.
I'll be ready with the clip. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah.
We can play. E.T.'s a big one.
You know what I just thought of? I know we got to take a quick break and go to news. But one that just gets me and got me, I think it's probably the first one that I can distinctly remember crying at as a kid, is My Girl.
Yes. Macaulay Culkin.
Yes.
And Anna Chlumsky, Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis. Pretty big cast, if you think about it.
And
a film that made me cry. Yep.
He had to, Macaulay Culkin goes into the forest to get the mood ring, but stung by the hornets and dies from the allergy. And then doesn't the girl, he's not wearing his glasses in the funeral, and she's worried that he can't see without them and stuff like that. I think I haven't seen that movie probably in 25 years. I think that's how it goes.
It is, and there's an interesting element where the young girl, she lost her mother at a very young age.
Yes.
And her family runs a funeral parlor. So death is not something that's foreign to her. However, his death is something that I think every person at some point in their life will lose someone as close as that relationship was. And the whole movie, you get to see that relationship. So it is. It's a real tearjerker moment at the end of the movie. In fact, I haven't watched that movie in probably 10 years. I bet if I watched it now, I would be a blubbering mess.
Yeah.
By the end of it. And I don't have a problem admitting it. I really don't.
I kid you not. I don't think I've seen that movie in 25, 30 years. The last thing I'll note about The Green Mile, we mentioned that one in The Crying. That's also one of those movies that has a scene in it that is so horrific and scary that I cannot watch that movie. I can't even remember the scene, but I know there's a scary, really frightening scene. I'll have to look it up exactly what it is. I meant to mention it earlier when I think it was Julie called in and mentioned that movie. But there's certain movies that there's something I will not watch. Scary, frightening, disturbing, that I just have to skip through or just won't even watch the movie knowing that is lurking there. That's an odd way to end this segment, but that's where we're going to end that one.
I'll throw one more in before you throw it to the news. Are you going to a break or the news?
We have a 20-second, we have a really short commercial.
All right,
so you go ahead, Roger.
At the end of the movie, I know this was a Broadway play, but again, another musical, Barbara Streisand walking out of the class building singing On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever.
Mm.
Just her powerful voice, what she has gone through in the movie. This is where she has lived several lives, and this professor has hypnotized her and is living through her different lives and his falling in love with her, actually with her past lives. And he can hypnotize people and make them, you know, stop smoking and whatever. And she starts falling in love with him, and he's falling in love with her. And then she finally is cured and is able to walk away and sings, as only Barbara Streisand can, On a Clear Day. And the music and the graphics, the imagery with the cinematography is just heartrending.
I just thought of one more. I'm sorry. I know, Curtis. Curtis, we're in trouble. Blake, I don't know if this one gets you. This is probably one that got me the most in a really transformative part of my life. Finding Neverland with Johnny Depp and Kate Winslet, the story of J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan, and Kate Winslet can't attend the premiere of it, and he has it performed for her in her home. And,
there he goes. There he goes, Blake. Yeah.
And there
he
goes.
That's a big one. And go ahead. You know, the film is well done, but it is now a stage production that you can see.
Oh, really?
And it is also, I have several friends. I have not yet had a chance to see it. It just came through Peoria recently, and I missed it, and I'm kicking myself for it because I wanted to. But I've heard nothing but, you know, good things about that production. And also, I want to point out, I've heard nothing but good things about that production from people in multiple age groups.
Yeah.
Like it was like a full gamut of because I think that's something to take into consideration when you recommend content to people. You know, like, oh, is this something you might like? I think this is a production that everyone could like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, John, I'm with you on that. That's a big one.
I pride myself on never being late for news. I'm as late as I've ever been. Blake, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate it, okay?
Absolutely. You guys have a great night.
Grab the Kleenex. We have 20 seconds till the news. Those are the stories that matter. These are the ones that don't. Here on 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Dave Plyer till 5 a.m. I kind of like that tagline. I'm going to use that more often, Raj. Thanks for testing that one out with me here.
Which one?
The one where I say, you know, I'll say, yeah, those are the stories that matter. These are the ones that don't.
Yeah.
Hey, Roger, are you Irish at all?
My wife is Irish, so by marriage, yes.
Okay. Does she have pretty fair skin?
Yes.
Okay. So, this is really fascinating. I read this article about where fair skin comes from the Irish. And I just, before I make this joke, this is a joke from the Irish paper, okay? So I'm going to just say this. Irish people are some of the palest, if not the palest people in the world, based on pigmentation, that sort of thing.
Okay.
It is not the weather. And they say, here in the thing, it's not because they spend so much time in the bar inside. They made that joke. I didn't make that joke about the Irish. So it's interesting, and people want to know, you know, was it, where does that come from? You know, these things have to come from somewhere. Was it advantageous when the settlers of Irish, you know, they lived in Ireland, and that was the, I don't know, I'm not saying this
I don't know.
But, yeah, okay, thank you, Roger.
Well, I think it would go further back than that,
it does,
actually.
It does. So
it's in the DNA.
Yes, and it looks like that fair Irish skin can be traced back to one person.
What?
Which I guess when you're talking about, you know, you're talking about what makes some people different than others, it is a mutation, obviously, that
could
causes
be.
That,
sure,
which
sure.
usually comes from one person. But it's a man, they think, who lived thousands of years ago. They've identified the gene, the researchers at Penn State University, identifying SLC24A5 as the gene responsible.
That one.
Yeah. I've got 2-6, and yeah.
You missed it by that much.
That close. So they say that's the gene that's responsible for skin pigmentation and a specific mutation within it responsible for fair skin. But they don't know his name, obviously. That'd be incredible if they did. But they think he lived in India or the Middle East.
Really?
10,000 years ago, before his ancestors eventually brought that gene to Ireland via the Iberian Peninsula. So that's fascinating to me, that a mutation 10,000 years ago, which is what they call it, and that's I'm not trying to say that in a mean way. That's how all of our genes end up changing.
Oh, sure. It's developed over
centuries. Exactly. It's changed. So a mutation for the very light pigmentation, and obviously he passed those genes along, and at some point his ancestors moved there. So it's just really fascinating that's the culprit they think. They go on to say here in the Irish Post article that they can't just blame their genes for foreign ancestors, though. The country itself is also to blame. The research indicates that genes controlling the extreme white skin color arose relatively recently in Europeans as far as 8,000 years back. So they say that given Ireland's relatively remote northerly location, it's likely that most invaders and settlers to the island have been northern white Europeans, of course, which makes sense, closer to it. And what happens is when you get a group clustering into one place, mm-hmm. invaders from Northern Ireland, that it strengthens the gene. Maybe that's not the best way
to
say it.
You're
around people that are like, yes.
So now you're passing on the gene.
Mm-hmm. And fair skin advantageous in northern climates because of the lack of sunlight obviously hampers the production of the vitamin D, which is an essential vitamin for bone growth and disease prevention. And that's why, and there's interesting, then other people have questions, well, then why do Scandinavians tan so easily? All that, anyways. But close to the poles, the atmosphere is much thinner, especially the ozone layer, so UV levels often exceed recommended rates for healthy living. So it just happened to work out that there's this mutation 10,000 years ago for a man. They know it's a man living in either India or the far east of portions of the Middle East, that mutation gets passed on through him. He obviously has kids and children, and that gene passes on. But it happens to be an advantageous gene for somewhere far north of there.
Well, right. It worked out.
It worked out really well.
Yeah.
It's just that's the interesting thing, because usually a gene is only passed on if I'm understanding the theories of evolution and how it works, that when there's a mutation, it gets passed on if that person survives to a point in which they can reproduce and have kids, of course, and that's how the genes pass on.
Well, sure.
But the idea that usually genes pass on when they're immediately advantageous. So some change in your body or some change in who you are or some animal presents itself as immediately advantageous to the where you live, to what you're doing. I'm trying to think of like growing opposable thumbs, helping out humans because it helped out immediately. Usually the gene expression of it, usually its advantageous state presents itself fairly immediately.
But I'm making sense. Yeah, you are. But some
they're like
appear
hidden
immediately, but some could develop over
I'm saying that the gene appeared and gave itself, but it wasn't advantageous to be super pale in the eastern parts of the Middle East and of India.
No, but tons of sun.
But that gene existed. It's not like people are like, well, I've got this gene, I better move north. It just happened to move north to where it became extremely advantageous to be there. I'm sure there's plenty of other examples, and I'm sure some scientists are listening right now, wherever they are, shaking their heads at my explanation going, oh, yeah, that happens all the time.
I don't have the gene that gives me darker skin. Mm-hmm. I have another scientific method. It's called burn and peel.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I get my lasting glow, my darker skin. I burn and peel during the summer, and my skin gets darker.
Interesting. Good one, Roger. I'm reading on in the article, and sorry if I wasn't paying full attention to the joke.
That's all right.
They also say that, and this is where this gets even more interesting, is that then obviously once this fair-skinned gene that is advantageous gets to Ireland, then research shows that there might have been some sexual selective pressures taking place. Is that what they called your college dorm room, I think, Roger? Anyways.
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Just my wing.
Exactly. In the partners in Ireland were then very picky, of course, about who they chose as mates, and that the fairest skin the fairest of the fair skin was chosen.
Sounds like Cinderella.
Yes. And so it's just fascinating that a gene that changes 10,000 miles or 10,000 years ago, 10,000 miles away, not only becomes advantageous, but becomes sought after. And then it just gets reinforced into what
we see
today.
It becomes predominant.
Yes.
Which is weird because with all of the interactions or the sexual interactions of the millions and millions of people in that area, you would think that it would not hold up over time, but apparently it has.
Yes.
Which is also kind of fascinating.
So they say at the end, who should we blame? Should we blame sex, geography, or the man 10,000 years ago? And the answer is all of the above. So as we approach St. Paddy's Day and you're sitting at a bar with a pint with someone who's Irish or not, yes, you can share this tale you heard on the day.
Have you heard the one about the guy 10,000 years ago?
Right. Just everyone write down on your name the name of the GSLC24A5, and I'll buy you a pint of the bar. More after this on 720 WGN. WGN, 3:49 on this Sunday morning, and so happy you joined us. Thanks so much for listening, and had a lot of people texting in and calling in about the sad movies. Really appreciate it. Love when people get involved in the conversation, and continue to do so, at least for the next hour and 10 minutes, 312-981-7200. After the news, at some point, we are going to do what we did last week. I don't know if you found it fascinating, Roger. I know you're a history and a news guy, but Dave Schwann, who normally joins in at 4:30, is going to come in a little bit earlier, and we're going to talk some presidents and some interesting history
that
facts.
That was great stuff.
Dave and I are just presidential nerds. I don't even know which ones we're going to talk about, but you give us a few minutes and we're able to just keep on going. So Schwann is going to join. This is a little choose your own adventure, Roger. So I just kind of had a list of interesting stories to go through.
Okay.
And we ended up spending way more time talking about sad movies than I thought we would. So choose your own adventure. Are we going to Alaska or are we going to Cleveland? One's down.
You know, if I could reach through the microphone and smack you on. I was thinking you were going to go to, shall we go to Acapulco?
I forgot.
You know, I'm like, well, there you go.
I forgot where the second story was out of. And nothing against Cleveland, but.
You know what? My wife took one of those cruises
to Cleveland?
Alaska.
Oh.
It was a land cruise.
She took a little. No, she went up Lake Michigan and through Huron and then
she
down
took a
Erie
boat on I-80 straight across. And
they used to do more cruises on the Great Lakes.
The Great Lakes,
Roger.
Yeah.
So,
well,
she
did one to Alaska. She loved it up there. She went with her girlfriend many, many, many years ago. She loved it. I'm going to say Alaska. Let's hit Alaska.
Okay, so amid the hundreds of barking and yipping sled dogs that line the streets of downtown Anchorage just last week or this morning, a small army of volunteer veterinarians, they are busy at work. They're bouncing from mushing trailer to mushing trailer, verifying dogs' microchips, who they are, and tending to any dog fights or last-minute medical needs. We're talking, of course, about...
I know what it is, right? I remember I did a story when I was living in Vegas on the radio station I worked at before I came back here, and it was about the Iditarod, and the signal from the radio station, because it was at 720 on the AM dial.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, it was WGN's signal, but GN's signal kind of dies as it hits the Nevada border.
Right.
So then the KDWN signal at 720 AM, which was also a 50,000-watt but directional, it went to the rest of the West Coast.
West and Northwest.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
So the signal was heard in Seattle. A week later, I get a letter from a lady in Seattle saying, thank you so much for doing a story about the Iditarod.
Okay.
Because nobody covers it.
Yeah, and there you are in Vegas.
And there I am in Vegas where, you know,
at
it's like
Palms.
90 degrees and, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, I love the Iditarod.
Well, here's one thing that's probably new at the Iditarod, at least in the last few years.
Okay.
So these veterinarians, obviously, they're there to treat the dogs. I don't know if you can guess or you can wonder, something that they've had to do now more recently than ever that they're doing with the dogs. The veterinarians are going mushing team to mushing team. And it's a very emblematic of the entire sports world and controversy.
Oh, yeah.
What
doping.
Is it? Doping.
Yeah.
Doggy doping.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is literally they are going from mushing team to mushing team.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they surprise them and they say, I need some doggy urine.
Right.
And, you know, dogs, when they're excited, they'll let you have some.
Oh, yeah.
They're not very selective.
Not where you want it, necessarily,
yeah.
But.
So literally, these veterinarians are running from team to team with cups to get doggy urine. They can go up to any musher at any point, any dog, and say, we need pee right now.
We need pee.
That's what the quote says. from Joelle Riley. She's affectionately called one of the, quote, pea catchers. So not only do they do it when the race starts, which I imagine is when you're going to get a lot of the urine because the dogs are so excited.
Oh,
they're all around
they're
each other.
They're hyped up.
They're ready to go.
They've had a spaghetti dinner the night before. Yes. They're ready to go, baby.
They carbo-loaded. But they take... They do it on the trail, too.
Oh, yeah, because they make stops along the way.
Yes.
It's a set trail, and I'm sure they do it at the end when they cross the line.
Yep. Dogs also have blood samples drawn to ensure that none have been given anything that could give it a competitive advantage mm-hmm. during the race. The list of medications they could potentially give a dog that has a competitive edge is a lengthy one, too. So the drug testing manual includes everything from steroids and tranquilizers to anti-inflammatory drugs and painkillers, anything that can improve speed or endurance or relieve discomfort on the trail, which seems sad, but, it's like any sport. If the dog is a little cramped up, I don't know what happens to a dog when they're running through Alaska, but they want them to suffer, I use in light terms. They want them to compete through that.
Right.
To show which team of dogs is the best. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. One of the other problems they've been dealing with up there, at least it was a number of years ago, a big problem that they had was they had to move much of the trail to different areas.
Why is that?
There wasn't enough snow on the trail.
Is this global warming?
I don't know what the excuse was or the reason was, but they had to change the location of where the trail where they could go in order for there to be enough snow because they were running on rocks
and dirt.
And it'll tear up the paws.
I wonder what's going to happen once climate change really takes full effect. The Iditarod, they're just going to be going through downtown, through the streets, through some grass meadows.
Well, no, they're going to move it.
They're just keep because, on going north?
The climates will be changing.
Right.
So when it finally changes, they'll have the Iditarod in the equator.
You're right. Eventually,
That's where the snow will cycle back around.
Yeah, Santa's elves will be helping, too, at that point.
Exactly.
Oh, and my goodness. And there's on CNN live, the Iditarod sled dog race kicks off in Anchorage.
Oh, there we go.
It's just going right now.
Some people that say that, it's inhumane not to give dogs the medication they may need, they say no. They say it's way more humane because if a dog needs medication, if a dog is hurt enough, you don't want to be putting drugs in it.
No.
It needs veterinarian
attention. They'll hurt themselves more.
Yeah, they'll hurt themselves more.
Iditarod, if you know about the teams, if there is a hurt dog, that dog is taken out of the team and actually put in the sled. They are then treated at the many different stops. They have veterinarians at all the stops where the teams are supposed to go along the trail. And so the dogs are taken care of. But they need to not be drugged up and enhanced in any way for their performance. Because, again, it's damaging to the dogs.
Right. They've never had a positive test violation, official violation. One musher, Dallas Seavey, came under scrutiny for dog drugging after four of his dogs tested positive at the end of the 2017 race. But there's been some speculation that he was actually sabotaged. That someone gave his dogs the medication that would make them test positive. I guess they take this seriously. I've always thought the Iditarod was this kind of like a 5K town is excited for. Like the Polar Plunge is happening later today, which is a great cause, and everyone gets together. I knew that there was more competition than that.
It's a very serious business. I've seen several documentaries on how these teams. Oh, yeah. This is a major competition.
Really?
This is like an Ironman. Seriously. This is a very serious competition. It's ages old.
And they take it that seriously.
Yes. Yes. Extremely so. Extremely so.
Seems like the dogs are doing all the heavy lifting.
But you also, the musher also has to be aware and feel as one with the team. They train all year long with these dogs, and they select the ones that they feel out of maybe 50 dogs that they may have at their ranch. They pick the ones that they feel will work best together in this race.
Honestly, I would just get on that sled.
Mm-hmm.
Get a bottle of Jack.
Go.
Go.
That way.
Keep going.
That way. Yes. Keep going.
And just pull me along, everyone.
Keep going until we get to the next trading post.
Yes, exactly.
I got to fill up again.
Exactly. Be a little nippy, but that's okay. Yeah. Get your cup and drop it in the snow for a moment. Gets a little more ice.
Yeah, right.
I don't need my whiskey neat. Just a little ice on that. You got plenty along the Iditarod. Quick commercial break, then the news on 720 WGN.
I don't know about this place, man. I just stayed in my hotel room, man. Every time I look out my window, it's pretty depressing out here, man. It's bad. It's bad.
So you're not going out?
No. No going out in Cleveland, man. It's all factories.
Do you regret anything that you said about Cleveland?
Not at all. You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation.
They can hear us in Cleveland right now, so
yes,
I want to watch myself. I have nothing. I've been to Cleveland twice, and they were both within a week of each other. Can anyone guess what I'm talking about? Been to Cleveland twice?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Games 1, 2, 6, and 7.
Happy 3-1 day.
What's
2 days ago when the Indians blew a 3-1 lead at first.
I met some great people. I will say, so we were doing the live shots for the previous show I was on WCIU. And they went out to Cleveland, stayed at a downtown hotel, this little one, and, went to some great diners, talked to fans. And I gotta say that when I watched game 7, I didn't go into game 7. I went to game 6. Because I bought my own ticket and went into the game. Because we were covering it more from a fan perspective, the fans mm-hmm. that went there. But my station didn't buy me a ticket. And we didn't have a press pass. The MLB holds those down pretty tight.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So I watched Game 7 at a place right across from the ballpark, a pizza tavern. And it was packed, of course, with Cleveland fans. I actually got a seat right at the bar. And they were the nicest people. They were, even as the game is going on, in that game with the ups and the downs, we're talking mm-hmm. about game 7, of course. If you don't know what we're talking about, Cubs Indians World Series 2016. And boy, when Rajee Davis hit the 3-run homer, tied the game, they were cheering, but they were never in my face. We were buying each other drinks. And, when the Cubs finally won, they could not have been nicer people. They were great. They were wonderful people.
Good.
So that's my thing to Cleveland. And I went and saw the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Lake Erie's right there. That's great. So I got nothing really against Cleveland, but Roger does. I'm just kidding.
Actually, I've never been in Cleveland. I have driven past Cleveland.
Okay.
Number of times.
Not a bad way to see the place. 312-9172-100. What do you hate about Cleveland? No. So this is just our new story is just coming out of Cleveland. We're not going to bash Cleveland for the next 10 minutes.
Drew Carey loves it.
Yeah, she sure does. He sure does. Okay. So we did the Iditarod just a bit ago. Roger, here's your story. And this one, Roger, have you ever stolen anything when you were a kid? Did you ever grab a candy bar? Did you ever take something you shouldn't have?
I will admit,
yeah?
As a child, I did pilfer an item or two.
Okay.
Swanee just laughed at my mm-hmm. use of the word pilfer.
Right. Yeah, like a pirate, a Norwegian conqueror for a Mars bar.
That's an old person's word. Candy bar, because I hung out at what we now call convenience stores, mm-hmm. little mom and pop corner stores.
Yeah.
And the candy counter was behind the counter.
Okay.
Because they didn't want kids taking stuff.
They didn't want Roger Badish stealing stuff.
Right. Here comes Badish, lock the door.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, they loved me at these places because I hung out there so much and I'd help them, mm-hmm. stock a shelf or two. And, again, I had no life. Or
this is
friends.
How he Shocker. Justifies taking
yeah, yeah, right. This is a real big buildup to you stealing their merchandise. So what did you steal, Roger?
Just a candy bar.
Okay, yeah. I once stole... My parents really wanted to teach me a lesson. I was a pretty good kid. But I once took a ball out of the ball pit at McDonald's.
Wait. Oh, okay. One of the plastic balls.
Yes.
The bright colored plastic balls. Okay.
I got grounded for a week.
What?
And my parents made me go back to McDonald's and return it. And I can just remember the look on the worker's face like, okay, like, who cares?
Right,
Take them all. Like, there's a lot
I'm sure they got a back room full of them.
Yes. And my best friend growing up, his dad worked for corporate McDonald's, and so I had to write a letter to him.
What?
My parents really were like, do not steal, like, obviously. I mean, I'm glad they did. It's a great lesson to learn, but I can just remember thinking, like, okay, well, they're just trying to teach me. Like, here's, I can just tell my mom getting on her soapbox. I'm like, all right, I'll play along with this. Okay. Yeah. I'll go apologize to McDonald's. I just remember the lady's face. It was just like a, you know, one of the workers there.
Yeah.
I'm like, here's this ball my mom's made. I'm sorry, I took it. She's like, I don't care.
And
do you want three more? Like, we got plenty of them.
Take a blue one, yeah, a red one, and a yellow one. Go ahead. Matching pair.
I just wanted a ball to play like in the basement baseball instead of like a hard baseball.
Oh, right. Sure.
I thought it was like sporty, you know?
Yeah.
I can't believe I got in trouble for that.
You know what I would have made you do?
What's that?
Wash them all.
Yeah, right.
Because maybe they're probably the most filthiest
of things. That's probably what she was upset about. Yeah, I had a younger baby brother. That's probably what she was worried about.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, right. I do apologize. Anyways, the point is, here's a story out of Cleveland. Okay. I had a joke. I'm going to leave it. All right, okay. So the headline is, Cleveland, someone just couldn't let it be. A Beatles fan cleared their conscience yesterday by returning a copy of Life magazine that features the Fab Four after a long and winding road of over 50 years. So Cuyahoga County Public Library representatives, there's so many puns written in this terrible story, I can't even. They may be doing the twist and shout after they received the Life magazine from 1968, along with a money order for $100 and a letter that read, I stole this magazine from the Parma Ridge Road Library when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry I took it. I've enclosed a check for the late fee. Which is interesting because when you actually calculate the late fee, it would be about $1,800. But they gave him $100. So, well,
okay.
If he had rent, he or she didn't take it out legally. They stole
right.
it.
Right. Oh,
so, if they had taken it out and never returned it, it would have been $1,800. So library officials thanked the anonymous paperback burglar for returning the borrowed, quote-unquote, magazine. And they were happy to get it back and get it where it once belonged.
The pages in it? Did he turn
Yeah,
pages
no, it looks
out?
Like it was all good.
Okay. All
right. And if he had taken it out legally and then not returned it, again, $1,800 in fines, because the library currently charges about 10 cents a day. And they would normally send to collections at $100, so this person would have gotten it. But anyways, they return it out of the goodness of their heart. They say that used copies are sold online around $40 for this specific one. No plan in place for the magazine. The library won't be saying hello, goodbye to it, though. This article, it's a TV station that wrote it. We're the worst writers there are. Someone, and then they start off the article, someone just couldn't let it be.
Oh, my God.
So then the headline is Beetle Late Than Never instead of Better Late Than Never. Can you not?
Man, who wrote this?
You know what? Cleveland. It's a Cleveland TV station.
It's a Cleveland.
They don't know how to write there.
I'm telling
Anyways,
you.
That guy just got me thinking about it. I mean, I imagine that everyone probably has stolen. That gets a part of growing up. Especially for young boys, like the stealing of things. I shouldn't even admit, but my older brother, he got caught. What he did, he stole something way worse than ball out of a ball pit. He went to a baseball card shop and took a rookie card and he got in a lot of trouble. He's a great. This is when he was a young boy,
right?
And he's turned out to be a great man, running his three kids that are great. And I even hate to tell this story because I'm sure it's embarrassing for our whole family. But it's 4:13 in the morning. My parents are on the West Coast right now, so they ain't listening. And my brother's at the firehouse, probably sleeping.
I just have one word for you.
What's that?
Podcast.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But I remember it so distinctly because my parents were so upset and disappointed. Not the angry screaming, because it was a piece of merchandise that he stole. I think I saw in my parents' eyes when they were talking to him about it, the fear in their eyes that they had a son that would do that. And maybe more, what else is he going to do? Anyways, he turned out great and everything's fine. But I can distinctly remember that being in the next room. You know, usually as a younger brother, you take joy when the older brother gets trouble. And my older brother burned down the front lawn once and lit firecrackers off in his room. Yeah, he was a little trouble kid.
Whoa.
And I would take joy when he got... You know, not joy, but, you know, you just, it's
kind
funny.
Of tickering.
Yes.
You moved up the favorite scale.
Yes, right. Yes. There was never any doubt where I stood on that. But I distinctly remember crying myself, worried, you know, because of him.
Because of how they looked, how they were reacting.
They were scared, yeah. And everyone was scared. And I think that scared him straight. And they, I think he was grounded maybe a month or two. And I had to go back, obviously, and apologize. And my parents, you know, asked him not to prosecute and all of that stuff because they were risking that, too. They were taking him back. And this was worth probably $500, a baseball card worth $500 back then. So that's like 20, 30 years ago.
That's...
I know.
Yeah.
So anyways, if anyone does have anything at their home, I mean, that's collecting and dust.
You don't have to necessarily have stolen it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have stuff sitting wherever of things that they checked out from a library or borrowed from someone and just totally forgot about it. Like, I remember as a kid, we could check out books for a month.
Right.
You know what can happen to a book in my room in a month?
I don't want to know, Roger. What are you talking about?
You know what? And I love my sister like to no end.
Where's this going?
She would take my books.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And I had like pristine books, nice and neat. I kept them on the shelf. She would steal them.
Right.
And then suddenly they would appear back in my room with food crumbs stuck in all the pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be screaming and yelling, "You ruined my book."
Yeah.
But if I had a library book that she wanted to read and then suddenly it would disappear, I didn't steal the book. Right.
But what you're saying is everyone's got some there. And clear your conscience, America.
That's what we got to do right now.
847 texted it, when I was in fourth grade, the teacher made me stay in for recess because she didn't finish their assignment while they were outside. I knew which drawer the teacher kept the reward candy, and I grabbed a handful.
Oh.
847, I hereby cleanse you of your sin. I shouldn't say that in such a religious way.
Right.
I'm sure that teacher had worse things happen. You are forgiven. It has been on your conscience, but you have admitted it. This is immunity time.
Let us
312-981-7200. Confess your petty crimes as children, and I will wash them away with a hand swipe. That's what you can't see. If you're watching the live stream, I'm doing that.
That's a wash.
You are cleared.
Yes.
So things happen. I was in for John Williams on Friday, and somehow cheating came up, and I admitted something that I had never even told anyone, not even anyone. It was between me and my English teacher senior year. I plagiarized a paper. Yeah, and this is right when the internet was common. It was right when school was starting, and he caught me. So it was when the internet was really just brand new.
Right.
And he handed back all the papers to students.
Yeah.
And I noticed mine didn't come to me. I knew then and there. And he pulled me. It was my senior year. He probably could have failed me and kept me from graduating if he wanted to. But I was a good student. He talked me through. Mm-hmm. I sobbed like a baby in his office. And I was just, I was in a pinch. I was so busy with other things.
Right.
And I just did it, and he let me write it again, and I still got an F for it. I got a zero on the paper, but I rewrote it, and that was the reward for not. So I think I ended up with like a C in the class because I had a big fat zero on a big paper. And he taught me a lesson, though, because then I went to college, never dared touch that. So
mine happened in sixth grade.
You're supposed to cleanse me, Roger.
Hold it. I cleanse you. I forgive you.
Thank you.
Free of your encumberment of all heavy objects hanging over your head your soul. You are cleansed.
Wonderful.
Mine happened in sixth grade, and it was the week of graduation.
Oh.
And we had to turn in a final paper, and I did my paper.
Okay.
I plead innocence to this day.
No hand motion for you.
But Mr. Sizek, my sixth grade teacher, claimed that I plagiarized my paper.
Well, it wasn't from the internet. I'm doing some quick math here. Well, they just rip it out of the encyclopedia.
It was from the library, from the card catalog.
Okay.
But my parents were called in, and the week of graduation, we were sitting with the principal at Oakton School in Evanston, and I had to go back and rewrite it, and I almost didn't graduate sixth grade. And that was, I learned that lesson there, too.
But you didn't plagiarize it.
I did not plagiarize it.
Then no hand motion for you. You shan't admit your crime.
I am innocent to this day.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick commercial break.
What was that?
Yeah. 720 WGN. The presidential nerds are in. Dave Schwann. And, hey, happy Sunday morning.
And furthermore, if I'm elected.
Yes. Yeah, what's your campaign speech, Schwann?
Oh, boy. I don't know.
Yes. You never told a lie.
I never told a lie.
There you go.
Never. Never.
I don't know
Nor
if I can run for
steal anything.
Now I don't know if
I never ripped off anything.
I stole a McDonald's ball pit ball and I plagiarized a paper. I don't think I can run for president anymore. although there's been many that have done worse things.
Oh, much worse.
Yes. How are you doing? Happy Sunday.
Doing well.
I just Good thoroughly enjoyed our last week's chat about presidents.
I did too.
And I found it fascinating. We're going to do This Is History in just a little bit. But I don't even know where we start to talk about these sorts of things, these presidential histories. You got any fun nuggets for us
Actually,
today?
Actually, I do.
Great.
Yes.
I'm glad you're prepared for this segment.
I do. I have. Last week we talked about the fact that there were two presidents. On the same day, Chicago was incorporated as a city because it was inauguration day. Martin Van Buren left office. Andrew Jackson went into office.
Okay.
But it was on this date, John, in 1931, President Herbert Hoover signed a bill making the Star-Spangled Banner our national anthem.
Really?
Yes.
Had there been a national anthem before then?
Kind of.
Okay.
What we now know is the national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, had been informally used. And in reading up on this, Woodrow Wilson signed some sort of an executive order in like 1916 or something like that, making the Star-Spangled Banner the national anthem or the national song.
Mm-hmm.
And then Congress passed a bill saying, yes, this will be it.
I gotta
say, Hoover signed it.
It's an unusual song to choose. It's not an easy song to sing.
No.
It's not about the revolution.
No.
It's about the War of 1812,
yes.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice as your national anthem. I don't know. I assume God Bless America was around then.
No, not yet. I don't know. Well, Irving Berlin lived forever. Berlin wrote God Bless America.
Okay.
And I don't know if he had written it
by then. Yes, right.
But God bless. You know, what was around was America the Beautiful.
America the Beautiful.
Late 19th century was that. But. Well, the Star-Spangled Banner doesn't mention the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
Neither does America the Beautiful.
Right.
But, so that's an easier song to sing.
Yes. That's all I'm thinking
of. Or My Country Tis of Thee.
My Country Tis of Thee.
Is an easier song to sing.
So Hoover signs it in 31. I don't know if it was just a pro forma thing to do, or was he trying to rally his country? Because
he probably was trying to rally. Good point.
Yeah. You're in
because
the
he was in the Depression, and maybe he was starting to worry about getting reelected, which he was not.
Oh, yeah. Blown away by FDR. Yeah, that time period's really interesting. And we talked a little bit about the Roosevelts last week, and talking about Franklin Roosevelt, the idea of, you know, he has this polio diagnosis in, was it the late teens and early 20s? 21
yeah,
maybe or so.
Right,
he's on his way up at that point, before the polio diagnosis. And some people have said that if polio doesn't hit Franklin Roosevelt, not only does it, as we mentioned last week, make him more able to relate to people with problems, the common man, but if you're a Democrat in the 1920s, you're never heard from again. The idea that the Republicans dominated the 20s, that his polio diagnosis delaying his political star from rising is what allows him to eventually take office in the early 30s, and when he comes to prominence again, that had he been around as a Democrat, because he was already a Democrat at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Had already obviously been in the state legislature.
Governor of New York.
And I think ran for vice president in 20 years.
He may have been
a Harding
candidate, yeah.
That
yeah.
he would have never been heard from again as a, I mean, I'm sure he would have made some waves, but Democrats weren't in power then
in
the 20s.
Well, it was. It really was. The factor was the Great Depression and the fact that there were, you know, bread lines and soup lines and a lot of people out of work. And what we tend to forget, too, is that there was a lot of rallying by then what then were called, you know, radical left wing groups that were talking about revolution. Overthrowing the government.
It was a real concern.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And when payments weren't being made to soldiers, I mean, they were rallying, ready to go, ready to take over.
Yeah. Yeah. So
scary stuff.
So it was. And then, but Roosevelt had this voice that carried, the old nothing to fear but fear itself. That voice, even today when you listen to it,
it's
commands your attention.
It is, even with the higher pitch East Coast sort of accent.
Very much
East and the Coast. Higher pitch recordings very, that we have, it still has.
Very so much Ravana. East Coast.
One thing about Hoover, Hoover's an interesting president. Obviously, people react to the Depression, which it wasn't his fault. He was barely in office. He was in office for a couple months when October 29 comes along. Yeah. The seeds of the Great Depression sown through Harding and Coolidge and the idea of the Roaring Twenties, all that.
Well, it was also the greed on Wall Street
of course.
That was going on
right.
with that also.
Now,
it
Hoover
really
didn't,
wasn't a governmental thing.
At all.
Yeah.
But Hoover didn't react probably as well as some people would have said.
That's the thing. He didn't. He didn't react as such.
But I did a paper years ago that I did not plagiarize. This one I wrote. back in college or after, I don't remember when it was, but about Herbert Hoover, he was a big part in World War I. He ran an agency of the government that fed Europeans that had been poverty stricken. Maybe it was just after World War I.
Right.
And he led a great European effort with American help to feed the poor. And then after his presidency, he advocated a lot for feeding poor people and getting food to people and giving them sustain. It's not something you think of when you think of Herbert Hoover.
Right. The other thing about that is Harry Truman remembered that. And during Truman's administration, brought Hoover in to help with the same type of thing in Europe that had been, just ravaged by World War II, just
as part of the Marshall Plan, did he bring him in?
As part of the plan, and probably, and part of the Marshall Plan, but to do the same thing. And I read a very interesting book on Harry Truman that, Hoover was ridiculed and forgotten and pushed aside and kind of living in retirement and obscurity, really. He was all right, but
right.
I mean, he was just... Not no one wanted him around.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, Truman called him back to Washington, called him into the Oval Office, sat him down and said, I want you to do what you did, just after World War I to help. You did this and that and the other. And according to what I read, Hoover started crying.
Really?
And Truman just stopped. He said, are you all right? What's wrong? And he said, you're giving me credit for something that I did. This is the first time I felt good about myself since I've left office.
And it makes you,
that
makes you sad.
Yeah, it does.
He leaves office
it
in 32.
Because
talking about...
he wasn't a bad man.
Right. Right.
But that's his case. One other thing about Hoover, just real quick, John, is that up until Jimmy Carter, he was the longest president to live in retirement after leaving office.
Yeah.
He didn't die until 1964.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
He lived a long, long time. He lived into Kennedy's, into Johnson's.
Into Lyndon Johnson's administration.
Which is incredible. An old man when he passed away. You mentioned Jimmy Carter and you mentioned Hoover.
Well, Carter now has that.
It has that record.
Record.
I guess what I'm saying is there's some interesting parallels between Hoover and Carter. Obviously, very different circumstances, but you talk about economic issues in the late 70s causing Carter not to win re-election. Hoover, obviously, a little bit more of an extreme case, but someone that maybe had a better legacy after their office than their 4 years in office as a single-term president.
There's a number of presidents that are like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm the first person ever to compare Hoover to Carter. I don't know if Carter's going to like that. Quick commercial break and then the news, and this is History on 720 WGN.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I haven't been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
All right. No Dave Plyer. John Hansen here till 5. Dave Schwann already jumped in the chair. And I love this segment, Dave.
This is fun.
This is fun. Yeah. This intro gets me going.
It's always good.
And where we're going to start for this week in history, we're going to go to March 5th, 1770, the Boston Massacre. So involving one of our future...
Oh, the Boston Massacre. I was, for a second there, Boston Tea Party. Two different things.
Oh, yes. Two different things. Yeah, we're talking about the massacre. A group of rowdy Americans harassing British soldiers who then opened fire, killed five, injured six people. And of course, the trial took place a few months later. And which lawyer defended the British? Do you know Dave Schwann?
I think it was John Adams.
John Adams, yeah. Our second president.
Something else about the Boston Massacre. First of all, if you're walking around Boston, which is a fascinating place to go, especially for nerds like
us. Yes. yes.
One place after another, you know, this took place here and that took place here. But there is an area on the sidewalk where the Boston Massacre took place.
Up on the north end then? Or,
I guess, yeah.
It must be in that old historic district.
Near, what do you call it? Boston Common.
Okay.
That area there. And there's a marker there that says this is where it took place. One of the first to die in that was an African-American man. Crispus Attucks was his name. Yeah.
And the British soldiers were acquitted of their charges, I believe. Two were found guilty. Captain Preston and six of his men were acquitted. Two others were found guilty of manslaughter. They were branded and then released. And it was amazing that John Adams, who was, you know, obviously he was still loyal to the crown at this point.
Right.
But he was sympathetic to the causes. He never thought that there would be a revolution at this time yet. But John Adams, an honorable man, took it. And I remember this is how it was depicted, at least in the John Adams miniseries on HBO, which is great.
Wasn't that great?
So well done. And it was based on the McCullough book.
And David McCullough just was ecstatic over it.
Yeah, yeah. And the book is incredible, John Adams. The idea that the relationship between John Adams and his wife, that John would read the closing arguments before the night before, always with Abigail, and she would critique. She would offer suggestions.
Yeah.
And not vanity, John. No, you know, like, you're being vain, you know.
Yeah.
And it was it's a fascinating documentary, or not documentary, but docudrama.
Docudrama.
If you haven't seen it, yes. I'm looking at a piece of history right now from this week. I can almost see it. Probably could have seen it better from our old studios. Jean-Baptiste Pointe du Sable found a settlement known in Chicago, and of course we have the bridge named after him now. 1773.
Right over here,
yes. On Michigan Avenue.
Did it not far from where we are, and of course we're not far from Fort Dearborn.
Right.
The old site of Fort Dearborn.
So it was 1773. And then you mentioned this, 1837, Chicago becomes incorporated as a city. It's our 182nd birthday this week. And you mentioned that it was when two people served as president, which might be confusing to some because now we inaugurate presidents on January 20th, but that wasn't the case.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. And the chief reason, I think, I read this a long time ago, and the cobwebs are starting to form up here.
Yes. You're clearing them out now.
But the reason for this was, you know, the elections were still in November, but the reason for it was they had to get all of their stuff together, especially if they were new in taking office and they weren't reelected. Travel was so much more difficult and so much slower than certainly in the early years of the country, no trains.
Right.
All you had was a coach. Horses. And so it took a long time to get from point A to point B, you know, New York City to Washington, or from this part of the country out to Washington took forever. By the way, just as an aside, John, if you're ever in New York City, take time to go down to Lower Manhattan, Wall Street, and go to Federal Hall.
Okay.
Because that is the build. Well, it's not the actual building, but it's the same spot where George Washington took the very first oath of office. It's a wonderful building to visit.
Really cool space. I would love it.
You would love it.
I didn't know he took the oath in New York City.
New York City.
I would have thought Philadelphia.
Nope. It was New York City. And but in there, there's a whole area there talking about what, you know, prior to the inauguration, how he left from the D.C. area, Mount Vernon, and then went up to New York, and all the stops along the way just being hailed and cheered as the first president. Oh, you'd love that place.
Yeah, really cool. And obviously, Washington, one of the biggest things he ever did for our country was leave office.
Yeah.
Something that was unheard of,
right.
that someone
right.
would ascend to power and then voluntarily
give
died.
It up. Yeah,
yes.
No, after that 2 terms, which there was no constitutional rule saying that the president could only serve 2 terms at that time.
Yeah.
But after 2 terms, he said, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm going home.
And everyone respected it until then, and it actually caused, I don't know about controversy, but caused strain for Teddy Roosevelt. So Teddy took over really early into McKinley's 2nd term.
After his assassination.
After his assassination. So Theodore then was reelected in 04. So on the day of the night of the election, 1904 election, so Teddy's now been elected to essentially a 2nd term, but his 1st full one. So he could have still honored the tradition and ran again in 1908.
Yeah.
Legally, he could
yeah,
have kept on yeah. running forever.
Truman could have done the same thing.
But in 04, he says to the reporters then, I will not seek another term. And it makes him a lame duck president from the moment. And he says that...
right at the beginning.
Right
yeah.
at the beginning. The night of his
that
election.
That was his big mistake.
And
there.
His wife said that she cringed
yeah.
when he said it just in the moment.
Yeah.
And he said the next morning he woke up and he knew what a
what
mistake
have I done?
He meant.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it doesn't matter what you say.
But then again, he formed the Bull Moose
yeah,
Party
and ran
again and unsuccessfully.
Yeah,
of course.
1912.
Right. But we have digressed.
Oh, boy, that should just be the name of this segment. Whatever, when Schwani and I do our own thing, it'll just be, and I digress.
Curtis is laughing at us in there, rolling his eyes.
All right, well, we're on item number 3 here. 1849, Abraham Lincoln applies for a patent. Only U.S. president to do so. Do you know what it was the device for, or no? I have it here. I've seen if you know.
No, I don't. Probably a surveying thing, because he was a surveyor.
It was a device for buoying vessels over shoals.
Oh.
Which I don't know what that means. I know what buoy means.
Yeah, it was it was buoying vessels over some shallow water.
Okay.
Shoals are things in, they're like mussels
okay.
In the water. He was a riverboat captain.
Oh.
And so,
Abraham Lincoln was a riverboat captain?
Oh, he took a boat all the way down to New Orleans and back.
How did I not know that?
I don't know.
I knew he was a lawyer.
Yeah.
And obviously a congressman. And I said this last week, I'm not as much of a Lincoln aficionado as
yeah.
you are, but a riverboat
yeah.
captain.
Yeah. He drove, I could go on about this.
I was just going to say, but
we'll,
I digress.
We'll save that for next time.
Yeah.
We'll save it for next time. But yes, he piloted boats. He did a lot. Before really getting into politics.
Yeah, he was a young man
yeah.
still, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Makes you look at your own life and go, what have I been doing?
Mm-hmm.
This week in 1868, this is interesting, Schwani. I'm going to read about Andrew Johnson, and then we're going to talk about this in a second.
Who?
Yeah. President Andrew Johnson, yes. The U.S. Senate convened this week in 1868 to hear charges against President Johnson during impeachment proceedings. The House had already voted to impeach the president. The vote followed bitter opposition by the radical Republicans in Congress to Johnson's Reconstruction policies in the South. And Schwani had failed, but not by much.
Not by much.
One vote.
One vote. And he stayed, but he didn't. He did not actually. He did not really run. He
for
re-election. Became president.
Yes, for when Lincoln was
that was the term was a disaster for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But he left office after because he probably knew there's no way I can get elected.
Right,
and so just left.
And obviously, that was the first impeachment hearings in the Senate. We had a 2nd one with Bill Clinton.
Right,
Nixon never made it to the impeachment proceedings in the House or the Senate. He only went through committee votes. But I found this interesting. I don't know if you knew this or if this is legally, I was listening to a legal scholar because, people are chatting about impeachment perhaps these days. I think we're a long way from any real discussion about it. But there is nowhere in the Constitution, according to this legal scholar, that says that there even has to be a trial in the Senate.
Is that right?
So and he was just speculating. If this current political situation goes in some way in which it goes, and again, we're a long way from it, and I'm not advocating one way or the other, texters, but if the House were to vote for impeachment, could you imagine Mitch McConnell calling a Senate impeachment trial?
Good point.
Maybe he wouldn't. Maybe we'd never see a trial.
Good point.
And imagine the fervor and that would cause. Fascinating, though. And, I look at that and I just say, it's just amazing how great our Constitution holds up. How great it is, but how much is left for interpretation?
Left open end to interpretation.
It's like, how do they not put that in there? Like,
thus,
you must do it.
The Supreme Court.
Yep.
That's why we have 3 branches of government.
Yeah.
And
exactly. That's what we, I just wish they would have wrote down a few more rules down.
we're really veering off here.
1862, Schwanee, U.S. issued first paper money. And I find it interesting, they had denominations of $5, $10.
Lincoln wasn't on it yet.
No, I can't imagine, no. $5, $10, $20, $50, $100. So no dollar bill, it looks like. But they had $500 bills and $1,000.
They had $1,000 bills, yeah. I remember as a little kid, I saw a $1,000 bill.
Who was on it? I'm sure it changed over the years.
I don't remember, but they had it. I think it's, what is it, Alexander Hamilton that was on? No, Benjamin Franklin on the $100
bill. Ben's on the $100. Yeah. I had read somewhere, I think, that the $500 at some point had, I don't remember who it was. It's escaping my memory. Now, was this a $1,000 bill that you or your family had, or were you looking at it in a museum or something?
No, it was a family friend.
Had it. $1,000 bill.
$1,000 bill.
It's Grover Cleveland. That's
it's
on
Grover Cleveland.
That's who
Thank
I was
going
to guess.
You.
I felt embarrassed saying Grover Cleveland. Why Grover Cleveland? That's an interesting choice.
I know.
Interesting facts about Grover Cleveland,
probably
of course.
Because he might have been the sitting president at the time.
Maybe.
So they just went ahead and did it.
The first time or the second time?
Either one, right.
Do you know who's in between Grover Cleveland?
One of the Harrisons.
Yes, Benjamin Harrison.
Benjamin Harrison. I can never keep Benjamin Harrison or William Henry Harrison straight.
Right.
You know, which one came first.
William Henry came first as the ninth president, I want to say, which caused, when he died, a couple, 39 days into office, I believe, or 29, something like that.
It was only a month, roughly,
Speaking of the Constitution, not writing things down, there was no clear plan.
As to who would succeed.
Exactly what would happen. And so John Tyler ends up taking over, and then they rewrote and put in there and made sure that the federal law, I don't know if they did it through a constitutional amendment or whether it was a succession act or a federal act or what it was. Clearly defining what happens. Of course, the whole electoral process was way different in the early stages, that electors voted for a president and a vice president, and there was one vote for each, and then they could pool votes, and there was all this messed up stuff in the first few elections.
Yeah.
But I digress.
But we digress. Give us another 30 seconds and we'll do the same thing.
In 1914, Chicago, the poem was written by Carl Sandburg. Interesting. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but hog butcher for the world, tool maker, stacker of wheat, player with railroads and the nation's freight handler, stormy, husky, brawling, the city of big shoulders.
Still applies, really.
Yeah, it really does. 1917, Desiderio Alberto Arnaz y de Ancha III. Does that ring any bells?
Desi Arnaz.
Oh, Desi Arnaz.
It's Desi Arnaz.
Oh, look at that. I would have gotten there eventually. Was born March 2nd, so yesterday, 1917.
Yeah.
And we got a little audio for that. Go ahead, Curtis.
Oh, you know, when she was going to have the baby, I told the head writer at the time, was Jess Oppenheimer, and I said, Lucy's going to have a baby. She says, what are we going to do? I said, what do you mean, what are we going to do? She's going to have a baby. That's what we're going to do. She already had my daughter, Lucy. Uh-huh. And they won't let us do the thing. You know, you couldn't even say the word pregnant in those days.
Right.
They say I had to say expecting. It was better for me to use expecting anyway.
Yeah. It still is.
You'll never get her off with pregnancy. Yeah.
Who is that? Do you know where that clip is from, Curtis?
That sounds like Letterman.
Yeah, it's Letterman 1983.
Wow.
Okay.
So Desi Arnaz, I guess I should know this, born in 1917. Obviously, he's passed, I'm sure, since long ago.
Oh, yeah.
But still, he sounds great in that interview. He's probably like 77 years old.
Just like he did as Ricky Ricardo on I Love Lucy.
That's what I'm surprised about. All right, I got time for like one or two more. 1937, the first blood banks form here in Chicago, organized at Cook County Hospital. Blood banking began growing in earnest with the return of physicians who had seen the effectiveness of transfusion therapy on the front lines, and they began to demand that blood be made available for the treatment of their patients. Interesting.
This is the first in the country?
I guess so. It's his first blood banks formed. I don't know if it was the first true blood bank was organized at Chicago's
Cook County Hospital.
So I guess that, you know, it had been popular obviously on the war front in World War I, I assume, if this is 37.
37,
slowly comes into more.
Somebody finally realized, hey, we need this. And also, they probably had better means of storing it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
refrigeration techniques.
Refrigeration,
stuff like that.
You know, taking care of realizing that blood was transferable.
Right.
You know.
But I digress. I want to say that I love how Dave writes these all out. Next time, he should just write four of these, and then that's going to take the whole half hour. I find it interesting, and, we mentioned this, the warfare led to this. There's nothing great about war, but there are interesting things that end up coming from war. The technological advances that come from a nation and many nations mobilizing at once. Pretty incredible stuff.
Yep.
Flight, I think, was advanced quick. I mean, obviously, flight came before, but World War I using Spitfires and all those planes. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they learned so much so quickly.
Yep. One of the things that's pointed out, we talk about the MASH series, the movie and then the series, of course, that went on for so long. But they have pointed out from time to time that one of the things they were trying to show in that program was medical techniques that were kind of improvised on the fly to save people's lives or to save a leg or an arm or something, processes and techniques came out of those that were furthered and developed to a lot of people walking around these days as a result of that.
Right. Yeah. The silver linings to everything. And as we finish it up, just two quick sports ones. 1959 this week, Dorothy Comiskey sold 54% of the White Sox to Bill Veeck. And the next year, 1960, the Chicago Cardinals moved to St. Louis in the NFL. And then, of course, they continued westward to Arizona.
Yes, they did. Yep.
Dave, I know you got to run over to the newsroom. Thanks for joining me, as always.
Boy, it's about that time, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I know. I got to take a break, and then I got to do Walter Jacobson's perspective here on 720.
Okay, John.
Have a good one. WGN.